Welcome to Fast Forward, a series of conversations featuring big thinkers in philanthropy. The series is produced by the Minnesota Council on Foundations. For more information, visit us at mcf.org.
I'm Levi Weinhagen, a communications and media specialist at MCF. Molly D'Aguiar directs the Geraldine Dodge Foundation's media grants, while also directing Dodge's communications initiatives. She's working at the intersection of grantmaking, communications, media, and community building. In this interview, Molly talks about tools and ways grantmakers can tell their own stories, as well as the stories of their grantees. Go to grdodge.org to see some of the initiatives Molly refers to, and come hear her speak at the MCF Annual Conference on October 28th and 29th in Minneapolis.
You have been with Dodge since 2005, and you do a couple different things there.
So I do.
Well, I would love if you just talk a little bit about the, well, as we said, the hats you wear and,
sure.
and what those maybe mean, just briefly.
Yeah, I've been with Dodge for 10 years, and I've played a few different roles throughout those years. I started out actually as a program associate for our environmental grant making. As I was doing, speaking to your point just a second ago about multiple hats, as I was assisting the program director in the environment, I was also thinking a lot about Dodge's communications because we did it poorly. We had a website 10 years ago. We had a website that was even at the time cringeworthy, and I really wanted to do something about it. And we were just at the beginning of really sort of the mass embrace of social media, and I wanted Dodge to be in those places too. So I just started doing it for Dodge. I created a blog for Dodge. I got us on Twitter, made, you know, a Facebook page for us, and I just started doing it. And I started working, trying to convince the powers that be to let me overhaul the website and do something really great with it. And it took a while to convince them, but once we were able to do that, you know, we really overhauled it in a way I think that really reflects who we are as a foundation. So I still do the sort of overarching supervision of our communications and thinking about our strategies and how we want to be talking about our work. But I don't do the day-to-day so much anymore. We have a communications manager who does that work, and she does it brilliantly. I'm so grateful to have her, because about 5 years ago, we had a CEO transition, and our new CEO came to Dodge really wanting to fund local journalism in New Jersey. And I have a degree in journalism, although I was never a journalist. And I had done quite a bit of work in my leisure time when I lived in Philadelphia around community media issues. And so he put me in the role of media program director and asked me to start to build a new program area around how we support and strengthen local journalism in New Jersey. So that's really my primary role. I mean, that takes up most of my time, but there's a lot of overlap between communications and how we think about our work, and actually, and also community information, community news and information. There's a lot of overlap in the lessons to be learned and the benefits and rewards of being good communicators.
Well, it sounds like you support and collaborate with the people who tell the stories, both internally and outside of your organization.
Yes.
You raised a bunch of things, but one thing I'm really curious about that I think would help others is if you could speak a little bit about how you did get the higher-ups, the people in leadership, to buy into the idea of investing some of the resources in a blog or Twitter or Facebook or the digital storytelling elements that are available. How did you make a compelling case?
Well, so with the tools that are free, like Twitter, I didn't really ask permission. I just started, because, you know, if it doesn't cost money, it's easier to convince people that it's okay. So I just started doing it. With respect to the website, we had a website before we overhauled it. This is common, and it may, for all I know, it may still be common. But at the time, I think it was very common, which is that we were still outsourcing our website. We didn't have, it wasn't our own content management system, you know, that we could get in there and make all the changes ourselves. So it was this extremely clunky situation where we were constantly sending updates to somebody who didn't work at Dodge to make all the updates for us. And then it took a while to get it all done. And then, you know, if you're a perfectionist like I am, you go through a few rounds of that to get it just right. And I think that the higher ups saw that. I think the timing was right too. It was just, it had been a very static website for a long time. And it wasn't really serving our grantees. And I will also say, actually, and this is very unique to our circumstances, but one of the things that put it over the edge was we had just had a peer review done through the Center for Effective Philanthropy, where they do, where you agree to do an evaluation of your work and you choose a number of your peers to by which to compare your work. And we scored really highly in all of the categories except basically our communications and our, in particular, our website. And so we had this really stellar report come back about how good we are in the ways that we communicate directly with our grantees and the way in our and that our grant making processes were user friendly and not overly burdensome, but that our website wasn't particularly helpful in terms of communicating important information. So I think that, you know, really tipped things in my favor as well. But there's another, I think, sort of deeper question there, which is that I think philanthropies tend to, some of them anyway, have sort of this knee-jerk reaction around communications that feels like communications is putting the spotlight on the foundation and that's the wrong place for it to be. Whether it's, you know, I think even Dodge, I would say, has had some board members who feel like it's not appropriate for us to be talking about ourselves. We should only be talking about grantees. And also, I think there's this underlying concern about the more you talk about your foundation, the more you're inviting more applicants to your foundation. And
yeah.
At that point, you can't quite manage that many requests and demands on your time. And I get that. You know, I understand those concerns, but I think that the good far outweighs what feels negative. I don't see any of those things as negative. We should want more people coming to us because we're sort of in the business of ideas, right? We want to hear people's good ideas. And the more we communicate about our work, the more transparent we are, the more we are able to actually attract the kind of applicants that we're looking for, the more clear we are about what we care about and what we fund. So,
well, what do you also think about the idea of if an organization, a foundation, does a good job of getting themselves to have profile in the media and in the community, it makes it easier for them to then share that spotlight with their grantees? Do you think there's truth to that idea?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, to me, telling stories about the work of the foundation and telling stories about the work of the grantee of our grantees are complementary, deeply complementary strategies. They build on one another. We of course want to always advance the work of our grantees and try to create the best possible conditions for their success. And one of the ways that we do that is by helping to tell the story of their work and their impact and why it's important. And if you want to be really practical about it, we're also trying to maximize our investments. You know, we're making bets all the time and we want to do everything possible to make our bets pay off. And if we're not telling stories about our work and talking about it, then we're not doing everything possible to make our bets pay off. So I think that I totally agree that there's a strategy there around always sharing the spotlight. And it also signals that the work we do is always in partnership, right? It's not us handing out money like we're kings and queens. It's us working in partnership in service to the people who are doing the real on the ground, hard day-to-day work. And so it's only appropriate that we're framing the stories about our work as foundations in that way.
Do you think there is some formula for how much energy should be spent on the organization talking about the work they're doing and how much energy the organization should spend talking about the work they're supporting, or is that too much of a division and not a way to think about that?
I would say there's not a formula. That if you're in a foundation that doesn't embrace communications quite so much, then I think that the way in the door is to start by telling more stories about the grantees and taking baby steps toward telling stories about the foundation and building that up over time and showing how those are so intertwined as to be both be important. But I don't think there's any magic formula. You know, I think that foundations and any storytellers that do it well understand that there are, you know, different stories for different audiences using different tools, and you should employ as many as you can to really convey the importance of your work.
Or say a small team or some group of folks who don't have as much of a communications system already in place. Mm-hmm. Are there good early tools that you think of, like, oh, this is a great platform to start telling your story?
Well, so one thing I would say, just in the way that you frame that question around small communications team, I really believe that everybody on your staff is a member of your communications team. It's not only the work of one person or however many people who have communications in their titles. It's really important for the whole organization to understand that they are ambassadors and storytellers. And even selfishly, you know, for program officers and directors who are looking to become thought leaders in their fields, it's really important that they also spend a lot of time talking about and writing about what they're thinking about and what they're seeing in the field in their particular areas of interest. So, you know, it's really an all-team approach, and that's hard. I know. I mean, even at Dodge, it's been a very long process to get everybody on board with that. And I would say that there's still room for improvement at our own foundation. But I do think that they get it more than they did 5 years ago or 10 years ago. They really get the value of everybody being part of the communications team. The other point I would make is that, again, even if you have a small team, you have your grantees as storytellers too. And so you can tap into them and tap into your communities and ask people to participate in your communications efforts, because people are eager to share what they know and what they see and what they experience in the world. So one small example of that, at Dodge, we give over our Instagram feed to one of our grantees for a week, and we let them share their work with the world. So you can see the multiple benefits of that. The grantee's really excited to be chosen. They offer their own unique perspective on the world. They help diversify our Instagram feed and make it interesting. It's basically zero work for our staff. We hand over, you know, the keys and let them do it. It helps us build deeper relationships with our grantees, and it helps those grantees build deeper relationships with their community. So that's just one small example of where you can really hand over the keys to others and let them be your ambassadors for you.
For something like that, or if you had a grantee doing a series of blog posts directly on your site, do you create a best practices, do this, don't do that?
Yeah, we do. We also do, for quite a long time now, we've had a daily blog where we have asked regular contributors to basically write columns for us, as it were. And we have developed a set of guidelines around how to keep it interesting, that it doesn't have to be essay length, that it should show, don't tell. You know, it's a lot of the basics there. But yeah, we learned over time, because, you know, you do get into some situations where somebody writes a blog post that isn't really great. And you have to have that conversation with people and say, well, here's how we think it might be a little bit better. And then over time, you sort of start to see, okay, well, these are the patterns we're seeing in the way that people are writing, and this is, you know, how we can build a style guide based on that. So Those patterns emerge and it becomes pretty clear what the style should be. The other thing I would point out too is just in terms of like the blog, one of the, I think, issues we ran into early on that we really had to reinforce was this is not a chore. It's not a test. We simply wanted to give them a platform to talk about their work. And we don't want them to agonize over how to write a blog post for the Dodge blog. We wanted them to just, speak from the heart about their work and share it with the world.
As
But
a
that
way
was,
of connecting with their audiences or their community that they're serving.
yeah, and as a way of connect, not just even connecting with their audiences, but connecting with a wider audience that doesn't know about their work and might be interested in it, or other grantees who say, "Oh, I didn't know you were doing that work. We should talk."
Do you have in your mind common mistakes or errors grant makers make in telling a story of their own work or even in helping their grantees tell the story of their work they're doing?
I would say there are two sort of basic errors I see. One is simply that they're not doing enough of it. Communications, takes a lot of time, and I think a lot of foundations just don't prioritize it. And we all get very overwhelmed in our day-to-day work, and we feel like we don't have enough time to do it. And it's unfortunate because we need to make it a priority so that people understand what we're trying to do. The other mistake I would say we make is that we just fill our communications with too much jargon. We need to just talk, and we need to speak from the heart about what our work means and not try so hard to sound smart.
Do you have a favorite piece of jargon that you probably would like to have stop being used because it sort of so obfuscates what anything anyone's trying to say? Can you think of anything?
I mean, there are somebody, I'm drawing a blank on who did this, but somebody actually has a crowdsourced list of philanthropy jargon. And I'd have to send you the link because I can't quite remember who it is off the top of my head. But I mean, there are all kinds of terrible, terrible words that we use over and over. And they don't seem so horrible when we're using them, but when you go out into the community, they look at you like, "What are you even saying? I don't even know what that means." But all of, especially, I think I tend to cringe the most about when we talk about impact and metrics and benchmarks, and those are the ones that really make me cringe because I think it takes the focus off of, the sort of the heart and soul of the work itself. We focus too much on measuring.
I can't wait for you to talk about those words at our conference on October 28th called Impact by Design. Would you, on sort of a final note, do you have one or two concrete tools that you think most philanthropic organizations, grant makers should be using or should try out using? Like you mentioned having guest grantees on your Instagram account, that seems really fun and really accessible. Do you have, oh, you should definitely be on Twitter or some version of that?
Well, I mean, I think what's so wonderful about living in this digital age is that there are so many tools to choose from. It's not just all about annual reports anymore for us foundations. We can tell stories in different ways to different audiences based on the various channels we're using. So, I mean, I think this is largely an individual decision that has to take into account, your capacity. But I can tell you that Dodge, who has, as I mentioned, one person dedicated to the day-to-day operations, although we are all using a number of these, we heavily use Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We know that we rely on our website because we know people are coming there to get information about how to apply for a grant, and so we know that that's a valuable tool for us. We have a daily blog post that usually is written by a grantee, although we write them too. We used to, I think Tumblr is a great tool. And I actually, we used to have one, and I will say, here's a capacity issue. We weren't able to keep that up. So we didn't use it, but that was when I was doing it all by myself. And so I was doing all those things I just mentioned, plus Tumblr, and that kind of pushed me over the edge. But I actually think Tumblr is a great tool. It's, you know, it's more than a tweet, but it's less than a blog post, but it still helps you capture important thoughts and ideas. So I think that's a really great tool. And then, you know, honestly, there are a number of other ways to communicate that seem less obvious, but are storytelling too. So one example is we use Storify to round up tweets and blog posts and news articles related to the work of our grantees, as well as what Dodge staff is reading and working on. So every Friday we do like a week in review, and we pull together a handful of what Dodge staff are tweeting about, and which grantees were in the news that week, and sort of just, it's a snapshot of the week. And that's a pretty easy tool to use that, again, costs no money and does a number of things for us. I mean, it helps give some insight into what Dodge staff are thinking about. It also helps shine a spotlight on grantees who have been in the news that week. And I think if you're following it over time, you really start to get a sense of who we are and what we care about. So, you know, there are those kinds of tools. Social media is such a huge, obvious choice for all of us. And I find that for Dodge, generally speaking, Twitter is less used than Facebook, which I think is generational in terms of our nonprofits. In terms of our grantees, they tend to be a little bit more on Facebook than on Twitter, and even less so on Instagram. But we actually, on our proposal, on our application, we ask them for their Twitter handles, if they're on Instagram, if they're on Facebook, and we gather that information so that we can follow them there, but also just to signal that these are tools that they can be using. That's another way I think that foundations can nudge a little gently to say how important it is for them to do their own storytelling.
Well, thanks, Molly. I know we're all really excited to have you join us on the 28th of October at the conference.
I'm excited to be there. Can't wait.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this Fast Forward podcast, please share it with your colleagues and visit us at mcf.org for resources on grant making and individual giving.